You are now listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com and WCRS 98.3 and 102.1 FM, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network.
And TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, 3MR Production, its ownership, management, or staff.
I'm RSB, and this is RSB's Other Worlds, heard exclusively on the world's greatest radio, TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard. Be heard. Be heard. Hi, I'm RSB. We've got a lot to talk about. Thanks for joining us.
Sci-fi news and issues.
Here's what's making news. Hey there, fanboys and fangirls. As any long-time reader of comic books knows, no one ever seems to stay dead in comics for long. It used to be that if you never see the body, you can't really count a character as dead. Nowadays, you can not only have a dead body, but a state funeral and burial, and still have the character back in spandex a year later fighting crime or causing villainy. This has become so commonplace that this phenomenon now has its own term, comic book death, and even has its own Wikipedia entry. It's funny, when Superman and Captain America died, it actually made the news. It was like a head of state had died or something. Even if you weren't familiar with the phenomenon of comic book death, folks should have known that DC and Marvel Comics weren't going to really kill off such prominent characters. That would be a substantial loss of revenue. These stories of the characters' deaths were just fed to the media as a publicity stunt to drum up sales. Let's look at some of the most popular deaths in comics and how the characters have managed to come back from the dead. Probably the biggest character death that even non-comic book fans would know about would be the death of Superman. He died battling the killer behemoth known as Doomsday through the streets of Metropolis. His body is put in a regeneration matrix in the Fortress of Solitude. While he was recovering in this regeneration matrix, four other Supermen emerged to take his place. Soon, Superman not only returned good as new, but better than ever with heightened powers. Following the events of the Civil War over in Marvel Comics, Captain America, otherwise known as Steve Rogers, is indicted for his anti-registration efforts. His arch-enemy, the Red Skull, orchestrated the assassination of Captain America on the steps of the federal courthouse. After the funeral, Captain America's body is secretly returned to the Arctic, where he had originally been found by the Avengers years before. Cap's old partner eventually becomes the new Captain America. Now, it later turns out that Captain America didn't actually die. The gun he had been shot with caused Steve Rogers to phase in and out of space and time, appearing at different events in his own lifetime, fighting battles. And the Red Skull takes over his mind and body. Rogers eventually regains control and defeats the Red Skull. Steve Rogers' old partner continues on as Captain America until his apparent death. Then Steve Rogers returns as Captain America. Batman was apparently killed by Darkseid's Omega Beams during the Final Crisis storyline. It was later revealed that he had disappeared into the time stream. Dick Grayson had taken over as Batman until Batman, Bruce Wayne, returned to the present. These examples are what most longtime comic fans can see are more or less publicity stunts or elaborate plot devices and not real deaths. There has been some significant character deaths that have stood for years only to shock comic fans with their return. In the 1985 maxi series Crisis on Infinite Earths, both Supergirl and The Flash, Barry Allen, died only to return almost 20 years later. Now, Supergirl died valiantly fighting the Anti-Monitor in issue number 7 of Crisis on Infinite Earths. When the DC Universe rebooted after Crisis, Superman became the sole survivor of Krypton. DC had tried various non-Kryptonian Supergirls over the years with limited success. Eventually in 2004, DC reintroduced Kara Zor-El, the Kryptonian Supergirl, and issue number 8 of the Superman-Batman comic book series. The Flash, Barry Allen, died using his super speed to prevent the Anti-Monitor's antimatter cannon from destroying the Earth. His former sidekick, Wally West, otherwise known as Kid Flash, successfully took over as the Flash for over 20 years. In 2008, the Barry Allen Flash made his return in Final Crisis number 2. It was revealed that when he died, he had become a part of the Speed Force, which powers several super speedsters. Probably the most significant character death in Marvel Comics would be the death of the X-Men Jean Grey during the Dark Phoenix saga. Jean Grey, formerly Marvel Girl, had her telepathic telekinetic powers accelerated to nearly godlike levels by the cosmic entity known as the Phoenix. The power eventually corrupted her to madness, transforming her to the Dark Phoenix. She winds up consuming a star and killing the inhabitants of a star system, endangering the universe. During a moment of clarity, she kills herself to ensure the safety of the universe and the X-Men. In 1986, Marvel did a bit of a retcon to bring Jean Grey back to the pages of X-Factor with the other four original X-Men. It was revealed that the Phoenix and Jean Grey were actually two separate entities. During the events of X-Men 100, when Jean Grey was near death, the cosmic entity known as the Phoenix placed Jean Grey in a healing cocoon and then assumed her identity. It used to be said that the only comic book characters who stay dead are Captain America's original partner Bucky, the second Robin Jason Todd, and Spider-Man's Uncle Ben. Now, only Uncle Ben has remained dead. I think the phenomenon of comic book death has lessened the impact and significance of death in comics. I think it's hard, if not impossible, for readers to feel any sense of risk or endangerment for non-superpowered characters like Batman, Captain America, or Green Arrow when they know that these characters have already died and come back from the dead. Well, enough yapping from me. Let's hear from today's guest, and let's hear what they think of comic book death. I have three guests. Oh, great show today. Who are my guests? And introduce yourselves, and what do you think of comic book death?
I'll go ahead and go first. Hello.
Hello, who am I speaking to?
This is Holland Hume.
Wow, Holland, good to hear from you. What do you think of comic book death?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking about this the other day. Comic book death, I really agree with what you said. It takes any risk and any, to me, a certain level of emotional involvement out of reading. There's a lot of times when you're reading this dramatic storyline and so-and-so sacrifices themselves. Don't worry, guys, we're going to be okay. I'm going to make this work. Oh, I'm going to kill myself, kill my family, I love them. And it happens so often that you don't even have an emotional response out of it.
Exactly.
Like, oh, yeah, you'll be back in a year. You'll be back in 6 months. Maybe even by the end of the storyline, someone will bring you back. I do remember, though, there was one comic book death that actually ruined comic books for me for probably about 10 years.
Who was that?
And that was Aunt May's death. In that whole messy Spider-Man arc, the whole Maximum Clonage saga. And I remember back then I was super deep into Spider-Man. I loved it. I picked up every issue, every series, every Spider-Man comic, even his guest appearances.
Wait a minute. They actually killed Aunt May? I mean, every comic, she was always near death and always in bad health, but they actually killed her at one point.
They actually killed her. If I remember right, basically, Spider-Man at the time was the largest selling series that Marvel had by far. And they were doing great, but for some reason they decided Spider-Man's getting boring, he's getting predictable, people are getting tired of it, we need to do something. So they tried to bring back Spider-Man's clone, Ben Reilly.
Okay.
And initially, that whole Maximum Clonage saga, which I believe lasted like 2 years, they re-released it, I want to say last year. The original storyline was only 5 comics. It was supposed to be just another arc. Oh, Spider-Man, clone's back. they're going to fight, then they reconcile, and he decides to go to the other coast. You know, he'll live on the west coast of someone else, and storyline's over.
Let's hear from let's hold that thought for a second. Let's hear from our other guest.
Okay.
Do I have...
Hello?
Yes. Is this Jorge?
Yes, this is Jorge.
Okay, well, what do you think of the phenomena of comic book death?
I don't like it because it's not so much. I really don't care that they're trying to get money or, you know, get more money because they're new stories. But I don't like it because I personally get attached to something or, you know, to a character because I start to relate to them, and then if they're gone, that does kind of like what else now can I relate to? Like, it kills it for me. So I don't like when they do it.
Yeah, it seems like it seems like a cheap publicity stunt to kill off these comic book characters and put these stories out in the news, and it's, people don't know comic books are making a big fuss about it, and it's like, you know, they're going to come back in like a year or so with some contrived reason as to why they're back from the dead. So hold it right there. I have one more mystery guest. It could be either It could be either Jose, Al.
It's Al.
It's Al. All right, Al. So what is your thoughts on the phenomenon known as comic book death?
Well, I mean, I think it depends. Some of them are just basically to increase the sales of the storyline or of the comic book itself, or, you know, get new readers or something like that. But sometimes I think it can actually be an integral part of the story. I mean, if Jean Grey is the Phoenix and the Phoenix is supposed to rise from the ashes, then her storyline was always supposed to be that she would rise from death.
Right.
You know, I kind of, but at the same time, if you remember back then, I was like maybe 15 or 16, you know, and the X-Men, even the second generation of X-Men, they didn't really have a character like Jean Grey. Jean Grey was the Omni-Mutant of the team.
Right.
She was the most powerful, you know, but yet she never seemed to be able to, you know, use the powers to the full extent. So they gave her something, you know, they gave her a storyline that would actually propel her and make her a star. And it was a good storyline. But when you killed her off, that kind of killed my interest in the original team.
Right.
So in order for them to get people to like Iceman and Cyclops and the Beast again,
they had to make the team complete again. The original.
Yeah, you needed Jean Grey. You needed to bring her back. She was the core of the team. I mean, let's be honest. You can kill off the dude with the wings. You can kill off the villain-like dude who wants to jump around. But when you're a telepath and a telekinetic, that's the uber power of the mutant set.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the rest of them, it seems like at this point, it's almost a rite of passage to die and come back. I mean, even the non-superpowered characters like Batman, you know, being thrust through time and trying to make it back, and then the heroes have to stop him because his return into the present will destroy reality, that type of thing. But all of the characters at this point die and come back. So, you know, even though I think Jean Grey kind of began this, I think her death was sort of the beginning of it, and then Superman just, you know, propelled it even further. All of them died. I mean, even in Crisis was the beginning of the multiple deaths and the significant deaths. I mean, we had Supergirl, had The Flash, and we had Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman died at the end of it, and nobody seems to even remember that she died.
Oh, because they brought her back. Didn't they reduce her to clay or something?
Yeah, they destroyed her.
And as soon as
the universe was revamped, she was back.
Right.
So she's like a time anomaly because they never actually revived her. She's the only one who wasn't really... Well, same thing with Supergirl. Supergirl was...
Dead for almost 20 years, yeah.
Right. And then you have, you know, you have both Robins. I think they wanted to kill off Dick Grayson for a long time, and the powers that be at Warner Brothers and DC Comics keep saying no.
I remember hearing that. Yeah, they wanted to kill him during the Infinite Crisis, if I remember.
Right. And I believe back in the, you know, early on, they wanted to get rid of him when they started to make him more of a Dark Knight. They wanted to propel him into that kind of mindset.
Okay.
But, you know, you got people who are used to their cash cow, and they're not going to go for that. You know, some
and
of
Jason Todd, the fans hated him, and that's why they killed him off.
True.
And they retconned him once already.
I was one of the people who voted against it. I remember being in, like, I think I was in high school at the time. And, you know, they had this little number you called, and, you know, we're going to kill off Robin. You get to decide. The fans get
yeah,
to decide.
I remember that.
It was ridiculous. And to me, he was probably the grittiest Robin, you know, that they'd ever had. I liked that he was different. I mean, you know, a little bit corny, a little bit street, but he wasn't like Dick Grayson, so uber corny that he gives you, you know,
fill in the blank.
You had somebody different. You had somebody who was a little bit embarrassed to be running around in pixie tights.
Yeah, you know? The little green underwear with the
right.
Yeah,
and he said, you know, and I like that character. So when they killed him off, I think at this point the only characters that have stayed dead in either of the big companies are Captain Marvel, because the one that came back turned out to be a Skrull.
Okay.
And Blue Beetle.
Oh, Ted Kord, that Blue Beetle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Uncle Ben. And Uncle Ben.
Ben Parker. They had a storyline back in the day.
Don't tell me they brought back Uncle Ben. I found out that Aunt May died and came back.
I remember them bringing back Aunt May. He made a deal sort of with the devil or whatever.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I remember him dying also, because they killed off Spider-Man. This is like twice now. The first time was when he came back in that cocoon.
Okay.
You know, and he was talking to the arachnid, I don't know, Omni-God or whatever, and, you know, they told him that he could live, and that's where I stopped reading Spider-Man for a minute. and then
me too.
yeah, that was a bit much. And, you know, Aunt May died, and they did something, and I said, okay, I'm going again, because, you know, they just never know what to do, and now they killed him off basically, and
they killed off his marriage. That's the one that got me. I finally read that issue where he made the deal with the devil, like, we'll heal your Aunt May, but we'll also get rid of your marriage. Basically, exactly. The writers didn't know what to do with him anymore now that he was happily married.
Of course. You know, much like with Superman. And
yeah, I wasn't happy about that either, with the new Superman either.
Exactly. I mean, you've had Wonder Woman die and become a goddess, elevated to a goddess, but she couldn't stay out of man's world, so they sent her back. I think the worst one for me is the death of Donna Troy. Because making
that
her...
That poor character was a victim of multiple retcons, because they never knew what to do with her.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
you can't have her... She's as powerful as Wonder Woman, yet she gets her ass kicked every day. And she's an Amazon, yet she has absolutely no relation to the Amazon.
Then they finally... I think the final verdict is that she was a magical clone of Wonder Woman,
right.
Because Wonder Woman needed someone to play with as a kid. Right. That was the deal.
And then some villain, because you got to remember, this is John Byrne, you know, the convoluted storyline of John Byrne.
Yeah.
They did was, in order for, since they had converged all of the realities together, and there was no 1940s Wonder Woman or 1940s Superman, they made Hippolyta the 1940s Wonder Woman because she had to pay penance. She knew that her daughter was going to die. So what she did was rig a contest so that Wonder Woman would lose. Artemis became the new Wonder Woman, and then Artemis was killed, who also came back.
Yep.
So
this boomerang. They all
died anyway.
They all come back.
Right. The mother has to pay. Oh, and the mother died too. Let's not forget that.
Hippolyta did die. That's right. And she came back. This is a great discussion. Can you hold that for a second? Let's move on to our next segment. Okay. This is a great discussion, guys. Let's keep the conversation going. I'm happy to have three guests here. I'm just trying to juggle and get everyone their turn to talk. And I'm more than happy to have you guys here.
TalkTainmentRadio.com is now more listener-friendly. We've categorized the programs that air on TalkTainment Radio.
Thursday, techno, money, law, and fun.
Cooking with Dave.
G-Fax.
Financially fit. Queer-minded.
Exceptions to the rule.
Go to TalkTainmentRadio.com and click on programs for times and podcasts. Click Listen Live for current programs being aired. We are the world's greatest radio. Radio, the way it should be heard.
I'm Idaho's First Lady, Lori Otter, and I want to tell you that for thousands of people who live every day with chronic pain, there is hope. Fibromyalgia and related diseases affect tens of thousands of Idahoans, and for years, treatments were difficult or unavailable. But now doctors have treatments that can help relieve the pain. Join me and the American Chronic Pain Association and help manage chronic pain. For more information about how you or a loved one can go from patient to person again, visit theacpa.org.
You're listening to RSB's Other Worlds on TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The SCORE Association, Service Corps of Retired Executives, was formed in 1964 as a nonprofit association dedicated to the entrepreneurial education and the formation, growth, and success of small businesses nationwide. More than 10,500 volunteer members provide individual counseling, mentoring, and business workshops for aspiring entrepreneurs and small business owners. The association is headquartered in Washington, D.C., with 389 chapters throughout the United States and its territories. For more national information, contact SCORE's Public Relations Manager at 1-800-634-0245. Again, that's SCORE's Public Relations Manager at 1-800-634-0245. This has been a public service announcement from TalkTainmentRadio.com.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit PeaceCorps.gov.
You are now listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com and WCRS 98.3 and 102.1 FM, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network.
And TalkTainmentRadio.com.
We've got the power.
Animation and video games. I had originally seen this anime classic in the early 90s on the Sci-Fi Channel. I remember renting this from the video store and copying this on VHS videotape. Remember those? This Japanese anime classic made such an impact on me. My animation pick is none other than the 1985 cult classic Vampire Hunter D. This film is based on the novel of the same name by Hideyuki Kikuchi, and takes place in the year 12,090 AD in a post-nuclear Holocaust world where the vampire nobility terrorize human peasants. The hero is a vampire hunter known simply as D. He is what's known as a Dampir, a human vampire hybrid. In the film, it is insinuated that he is the son of the most famous vampire of all. He has a demon grafted onto the palm of his hand that talks to him from time to time. D himself is a man of few words, letting his actions and his longsword do the talking. The film looks and feels like a post-apocalyptic western, with D wearing a black wide-brimmed hat and black cloak riding into town on a cybernetic horse. He comes to the aid of Doris Lang, the daughter of a deceased werewolf hunter who is being terrorized by vampire lord Count Magnus Lee. She and her little brother are all alone on their small farm trying to fend off the Count and his minions. She has no money to pay Dee but promises him three meals and offers herself to him as payment. There's a lot of great conflict in this film between the various characters, which keeps the drama interesting. There's the obvious conflict between Doris Lang and Count Magnus Lee, but there's also the conflict between the Count and his daughter, Lamika. She resents the 10,000-year-old Count's desire to turn the 17-year-old commoner, Doris, into his vampire bride. There's the conflict between Doris and Greco-Roman. Nice name. The mayor's son, who wants her, but she wants nothing to do with him.